Imagine you're out on the water, you're a marine researcher, and you play a sound into the ocean. And the animal on the other end not only responds, but starts what feels like a deliberate half-hour-long conversation with you.
I mean, that's a staggering moment.
It really is. And for us, that's the launch pad for a much deeper investigation today. Mm. So our mission in this deep dive is to go way beyond that one acoustic exchange.
Right.
We're taking the source material, this really powerful academic paper that draws on decades of visual data, and we're going to chart the epic 38-year life story of the humpback whale at the center of it all.
Her name is Twain, ID CK0401.
Exactly. We're using her history to show this wasn't just an interaction with any whale, but with an individual who brought this massive documented personal history into that moment.
And what's so valuable here for you to consider is just how rare this kind of data set is.
Mm-hmm.
Humpback whales, well, they're estimated to live up to 70 years. So having almost four decades of documented observations for one single animal.
That's a huge chunk of her life.
Mm-hmm. It covers the majority of her adult life. And this record is just exceptionally valuable because it gives us this, you know, high definition, if indirect, view into her individuality.
So it's not just charting her migrations.
No, it's establishing the context, the experience she brought to that very specific acoustic engagement back in 2021.
Okay, so let's unpack that foundational moment, the encounter that really put Twain in the scientific spotlight.
It's acoustic interaction, yeah.
It was captured in Frederick Sound, which is up in southeast Alaska, during August of 2021. And the timeline is incredibly precise. On August 18th, researchers recorded Twain making this uniquely clear vocalization.
A specific type of call.
Right. And they chose that exact recording to use for a playback experiment the very next day, on August 19th. But before we get to the response, what exactly was the sound?
It was a particularly clear example of the THROP social call.
A THROP.
Yeah, a THROP. And this is crucial. The THROP is a low-frequency sound, lasts less than a second. It is not the complex, multi-layered song that you hear the male humpback sing on the breeding grounds.
So it's not a ballad.
Not at all. It's short, punchy, functional. It's typically used in close-range social situations, maybe for coordination or group cohesion or just, you know, finding a partner in murky water.
More like an urgent social ping.
That's a great way to put it, yes.
Okay, so they play her sound back to her using an underwater speaker. Do they get an immediate reaction?
They do, but what's really interesting is that the interaction was actually initiated by Twain herself.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, she approached the research vessel, came in extremely close, just 20 meters away, before they even started the playback.
So she was already curious.
She was already engaged. They broadcast the recorded THROP call, and after two playbacks, they heard an identical response vocalization.
Her own THROP.
Her own call coming right back at them.
And this is where it shifts, right? From just simple observation to, well, genuine engagement.
Mm-hmm.
The exchange evolved into this extended 30-minute call and response session. Now, when the sources call this a conversation, were the researchers worried about, you know, anthropomorphizing?
That's always a concern.
What behaviors proved this was motivated communication and not just, say, acoustic curiosity?
Well, that's the key analytical point, isn't it? It wasn't just noise detection. Humpbacks, like a lot of marine mammals, can ignore unnatural noise. Or they might approach a sound source out of curiosity, look around, and then leave pretty quickly.
But she stayed.
She stayed for 30 minutes. And she consistently responded to their specific acoustic stimulus with her own specific vocalization. That suggests intent.
Right.
The source material actually notes the animal appeared motivated to communicate. And that means she sustained the engagement in a way that is, well, it's highly unusual for a purely investigative encounter.
That makes the whole thing feel so much more personal.
Yeah.
Which brings us to the science of identity.
Yes.
To really contextualize that motivation, we first have to understand how you even trace one specific whale across thousands of miles in almost four decades.
Indeed. We identify them in the ocean using a method that is both, well, kind of low tech and also incredibly powerful.
Fluke identification.
Fluke identification. The ventral side of the humpback fluke, so the underside of the tail, carries these unique persistent marks.
But how reliable can those marks really be over a 38-year span?
Oh, highly reliable. These markings come from a combination of things. You have the genetically determined pigmentation patterns.
The black and white spots.
Exactly. Mm. And then, crucially, you have acquired abrasions. We're talking about the cumulative history of the whale carved right into its tail.
So scars?
Scars, cuts, caused by everything from encounters with major predators like killer whales and great white sharks, to chronic injuries from, say, fishing gear entanglements or boat strikes.
Wow, they literally tell the story of the animal's survival.
That's it, exactly.
And I'm guessing the efficiency of tracking those marks has changed a little bit with technology.
Oh, dramatically.
This isn't just someone flipping through old photo albums anymore.
Not at all, no. The speed and accuracy today is rooted in digital databases like happywhale.com. It uses machine learning algorithms to match user-uploaded photos with really high precision.
And that lets researchers quickly link a new sighting to old ones.
Yes, ones stored in legacy systems, like the big database maintained by the University of Alaska Southeast.
So the system is powerful, but you mentioned a challenge that comes from this success, redundant identification. Twain has 10 different ID labels.
Mm-hmm.
What are we looking at when we see IDs like Seek 0401 or HI040062 or PWF-NP3005?
That is the classic challenge of decentralized research.
Mm.
Those acronyms, they usually represent the regional databases that made the first sighting.
Okay.
So Seek probably stands for Southeast Alaska, where she feeds. HEKI is likely the Hawaii database where she breeds. PWF could be the Pacific Whale Foundation.
I see.
Before these systems were all talking to each other, researchers in Hawaii would photograph a fluke, give it a local number, and they have no idea that the same whale had already been cataloged in Alaska a few months earlier.
So the real technical achievement here wasn't just finding 10 different numbers for her.
No.
It was confirming that those 10 separate regional names scattered across all these databases all belong to one single traveler, Twain.
Precisely. And synthesizing those labels proves the immense value of this kind of centralized digital tracking. It takes her life story out of 10 different filing cabinets and compiles it into one verifiable 4-decade-long biography.
Let's follow that biography then across the North Pacific. Her life involves these massive migratory patterns.
Huge.
She does a seasonal transit of about 3,000 miles. I mean, just think about traveling that distance twice a year, every year for almost 40 years.
And that scale of travel connects her two essential environments. Her summer is spent on the feeding grounds in Southeast Alaska, specifically around Frederick Sound, where the encounter happened.
And Stevens Passage.
And Stevens Passage, yes. Then she makes that enormous journey south to her winter breeding grounds near West Maui in Hawaii.
And the sightings show her moving consistently between those two spots.
Very consistent.
We have some concrete milestones marking her long life, too. The first documented sighting of Twain was way back in 1984 in Southeast Alaska.
Which is what officially places her age at a minimum of 38 years as of the source date in 2023.
And she wasn't just a traveler. She was a mother, which gives us some critical social context.
Mm-hmm.
A sighting from July 2019 noted that Twain was seen with a calf.
Yeah.
But maybe even more insightful, when we think about her social intelligence, is her continued participation in collective feeding behaviors.
Mm, the bubble net feeding.
Recent sightings from 2022 suggest she was actively participating in bubble net feeding groups up in Alaska.
And that specific detail, her participation in bubble net feeding, is highly relevant when we consider her capacity for complex communication.
Okay, so for anyone unfamiliar, what exactly is bubble net feeding? And why does her doing it suggest a high level of, well, cognitive capacity that might link to her willingness to engage in that 30-minute chat?
Well, bubble net feeding is a highly collaborative foraging technique. It's not something a whale does alone.
It requires teamwork.
A lot of teamwork. Synchronized timing, distinct roles. A group of whales works together. Usually one whale takes the lead, creating this net of air bubbles to corral small fish upward.
And the others follow a specific path. A
very specific trajectory. Often vocalizing to help concentrate the prey into a tight column right before they all lunge up to the surface to feed.
So the fact that Twain was actively participating in these high coordination groups as late as 2022?
It suggests she's an experienced key member of a stable and complex social structure. She's not a solitary wanderer. She's a highly social animal who understands teamwork and, well, sophisticated communication.
Which brings us back to the photo gallery over time. It doesn't just confirm who she is in 1 year. It lets us see the passage of time on her body.
Right, the evolution of her individual physical history.
It's like reviewing a comprehensive visual log of her life.
Exactly. When we look at the photo gallery of her flukes across those 4 decades, we see these persistent characteristics. The original defining features included 3 diagonal linear markings on the left side of the fluke underside.
Okay.
One of those marks is actually made up of 3 collinear white circles. Those features have never changed. They allowed researchers to track her reliably from the very beginning.
So she's identified by a combination of her birthmarks, so to speak, and her battle scars.
A perfect way to describe it.
Let's talk about those acquired injuries. They aren't just damage. They're like timestamps of significant events in her life.
They absolutely are. We can ignore the temporary changes, you know, things like barnacles or some vegetal growth on the fluke tips.
Right.
But we focus on the permanent trauma. And for Twain, the most significant acquisition was a semicircular divot that appeared on the left trailing edge of her fluke.
And when did that show up?
Sometime between the 2008 and 2009 sightings.
Why is tracking one specific scar like that so important for maintaining the integrity of her identity across all those different databases?
Because it acts as a chronological bookmark. It tells us she survived a significant physical trauma, likely a big predator attack, an entanglement, or a major boat strike sometime after the 2008 season.
And that injury then became a permanent, reliable new feature for identification.
Exactly. It lets researchers definitively confirm her identity, even when older images might be poor quality. And it helps them quickly rule out any other similar-looking whales. It just solidifies the data trail for her entire recorded life.
So if we pull all this together, the acoustic encounter in Frederick Sound wasn't a random event with some anonymous humpback.
Not at all.
It was an extended, sustained conversation with an individual named Twain, a confirmed long-lived traveler who has crossed the Pacific dozens of times, survived significant trauma, successfully raised a calf, and participates in these highly complex cooperative feeding behaviors.
Mm.
The entire context of her Thelminate engagement just changes completely when you know her history.
It moves the conversation from just, you know, an anomalous acoustic event to a profound behavioral data point.
Yeah.
And this deep dive into Twain's history, it validates a really critical forward-looking implication for cetacean research globally. The success of tracking her visually for 38 years using fluke photos should absolutely be the blueprint for how we integrate acoustic data.
So what does that look like?
Well, we need expanded databases that specifically pair individual visual IDs, like these high-accuracy fluke photos, with acoustic recordings of their vocalizations.
Matching the face to the voice, basically.
Exactly. If we can consistently match a specific sound, like that throb social call, to a specific long-lived individual like Twain, that is essential for truly making headway on understanding the complexity, the meaning, and the stability of humpback communication.
So here's the final thought for you to take away. If a whale with a documented lifetime of high social complexity and experience demonstrates an apparent motivation to engage in a 30-minute controlled scientific exchange, what deeper communication, what language, if you will, are we failing to translate by not consistently matching those individual voices to those individual decades-long histories? That is the profound new question Twain's long life is now raising for everyone listening.